Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast brought to you by Shooters in Nagoya. I'm John Gibson, talking to you on location at White Smoke in the Azabu Juban area of Tokyo. With me, of course, is Jim Allen. Howdy, Jim.
Hey, John. How's it going? Got a day off. Newspaper holiday.
Got a day off. Was able to run today. Thanks for doing it. Yeah. Not too much pain in the old Achilles.
Good.
We'd like to thank White Smoke owner Craig White and the staff here for allowing us to record here tonight. Much appreciation to them and to the customers when they come in as we are recording before they actually open. They're very gracious to let us in early.
Yep.
Now, we've got issues. We might have a lot of trouble trying to stay under an hour. We've got an interview with Dave DeFreitas about the recent draft. I say recent, but it was in October.
Yeah.
We're going to discuss the disappointing MVP voting and take a look at some of the changes.
Who's disappointed in the MVP voting? I wasn't disappointed in mine.
I wasn't disappointed in mine. But anyway, the sacks are jam-packed, so let's start clearing the bases. So the draft, which happened, do you remember what day? I'm thinking October.
It happened just before the start of the Japan series, so it's actually November.
I thought it was October.
No.
The 21st was the date that I had in my head, but we'll look it up sometime. And, you know, this is what happens, actually. You know, we got so much stuff. This is what happens when you don't have a show for 2 weeks. Things pile up, players and potential skippers start team hopping, and the media goofs up the PL MVP vote, and we end up with too much to fit in an hour. I'm gonna kill people. We'll do our best to get it in, though.
And not kill anybody. I
think there should be a couple heads rolling somewhere, but...
Wow.
I'll try not to get arrested.
I would try not to act upon that vicious intent. Although, yeah, I have to admit, when I heard the results of the MVP voting, and then the next day saw the actual votes, it was really discouraging.
Well, my jaw kind of hit the carpet there at the hotel, and I'm still trying to get it back into place. I think it's out of kilter.
I think you got to go back there. I think you go to lost and found. I think you left piece of it there.
All right, well, let's start with the draft talk. And honestly, I was expecting Dave to talk about his top 10, and he basically gave me, he threw me a changed up, and he shaved it down to 6.
Okay.
But let's go to the interview and listen to that. All right, I'm joined here again with Cleveland Indians Pacific Rim Scouting Supervisor. That's long, man. That is really long. Dave DeFreitas, good to talk to you again, man.
Yeah, how you doing? Nice to be back.
Nice to have you here. We're going to talk about the draft today, and as always, thank you so much for joining the show. But, you know, you're not going to charge us extra now since you're coming back so soon again after your last appearance.
I wasn't aware that I was able to charge anything.
Oh, good. Well, let's keep it that way. We appreciate being able to share your knowledge with the listeners. Now, how many high school and university and corporate games do you go to in a season or a year or so? Can you even count this?
Yeah, I don't know. It depends on who you're following and when and where the tournaments are. I mean, I live in Tokyo, so obviously the ones that are closer to where I live are easier to get to. But, it could be anywhere from, I don't know, 4 games a day for a week to 2 weeks, and then you get some downtime. It's tough to judge exactly how many.
Well, it seems like you're busy. I mean, I bump into you once in a while at a game, at a pro game, but I know that you go to these high school games and these corporate league games, that you've even invited me to wake up early and trek out to somewhere that seems like it's, you know, north of Hokkaido to watch a game. But I know you're busy, so...
Yeah, no, it's all good. It's part of the job. It's different every day, which is what I like.
Yeah, I think we all like that. It fits the profile. All right, well, let's talk about your top 10 in the draft that went past us, that zipped past us in October, and we didn't really get a chance to talk about it at that time. But your number 10 guy, we'll count down, make it exciting.
Let's see. I'm not sure that I had 10 that I really followed. There was a top few. I liked, most of the guys in the first round were guys that, that I thought would, become valuable players. But it's really, I'll go with, like, say, the top 6 or so. Yokohama's pick, Kitagata, right-handed pitcher.
Uh-huh.
He was a high school kid. I had to see him a few times, and he performed pretty well in Koshien. He's got a big arm.
It's a Yujo Kitagata.
Yeah.
And he's a right-handed pitcher? Okay.
Yeah, and I believe it was Yokohama that took him. He was up to, 94, 96, I think.
Which is pretty good for a high school kid, right?
Koshien, yeah. You don't sound that
impressed.
Well, I mean, you don't see it as much here in Japan.
Uh-huh.
He's a young kid. He's got some stuff to learn with his command and with the secondary stuff, but there's a lot to work with there.
All right. Number five guy?
Let's see. Who did I have? Probably Yoshimoto, the Adachi High School kid. They were billing him as the next Darvish.
He's a Shoji Yoshimoto.
Yeah.
And he's a right-handed pitcher as well.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because it looks like that wasn't their first pick. And their first pick was also a right-handed pitcher.
Well, he's not as polished as some of the other guys, but you know, with the body and with his stuff, you can see him developing pretty good. And SoftBank's always done well with pitching in their drafts. I thought, you know, they've always drafted pretty well.
Right, and they took a guy named Shota Takeda, he's a high school pitcher. He's at Miyazaki Nihon University High School.
They like the young guys there. They do a pretty good job of bringing them up, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've noticed that with the crew of pitchers. I mean, you know, and for me, it's been since 1999 that I've noticed that they do a good job with the pitchers because some teams just have a reputation, you know, like the Dragons and the Giants, of getting either acquiring or developing pitchers. And but the Hawks do an extraordinary job, I think, of guys who are not always like Arakaki. You know, they're not the big-name guys, and then they make them into really good quality starting pitchers and relievers and whatever, as we saw with Setsu this past...
They've got a good... they're doing something right with player development, that's for sure. Yeah. And, you know, their scouts obviously know what they're looking at.
All right, your number three guy?
Who did I say? I think I said Ito. The Hanshin kid out of KO.
Uh-huh.
The right fielder.
Hayata. Ito.
Yeah.
Right, he's from KO University,
He's a solid player. You know, he's in Japan, I guess he'd be considered a five-tool type guy. You know, he can run, hit for power, hit, play good defense, he can throw. For me, I kind of saw him as a young Kanemoto.
Really?
Yeah, I'm sure they see
him. High praise.
I didn't get to see Kanemoto when I was younger, but talking to some of the guys, it's, you know, similar body, similar swing, similar abilities in the outfield and able to run.
Uh-huh.
You could see him develop along those lines.
Yeah, he's a guy who throws right-handed but bats left-handed.
So. Yeah, he was head and shoulders above any other position player in the draft this year, I thought.
Wow.
There wasn't really anybody close to him, like hitter-wise.
Do you think, this was a question I was going to save to the end, but do you think he's a guy who might be able to make the first team and contribute a little bit this upcoming season?
I think so. Depending, like, looking at who they had playing in their outfield other than Merton this year, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, we'll have to see what the team looks like.
I think they'd probably want him up there learning from Kanemoto as well, since they're, you know.
Similar type players.
Their skill set, yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. And your number two guy?
Did I skip one? Oh, I skipped one. I skipped Nomura from the Carp.
You did? All right.
I had him. I had Ito above him, but Nomura is a solid pitcher.
This is Yusuke Nomura. He's a right-handed pitcher.
Out of Meiji.
Meiji University. Okay.
And he'll be a guy that could step into the rotation, I would think, right away. You know, he's been the ace for Meiji for 3 years now.
Uh-huh.
Is that a
compliment on his skill level, or is it a...
He was a little bit more advanced as a young guy, you know, as a freshman and sophomore than some of the other ones.
Right.
With his command. You know, stuff, I think, has always been there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he's able to command three pitches, which is always a plus. And, you know, he's sitting 140 to 145, 146. You know, it's like 88, 91 around there.
Not overpowering, but...
No, but he gets good movement, and he can, you know, pitch to both sides and throw his changeup and his breaking balls for strikes at any time. I put him above Fukui, who was our first-round pick last year.
Really? Because, I was going to ask you, I mean, is that are you praising his ability, or are you... thumbing your nose a little bit at the rotation of the Hiroshima Carp.
No, not necessarily. I mean, they've got you know, Fukui is going to take some steps forward, or should.
Should, yeah.
Maeda will probably bounce back a little bit. If they get Otake back, then they'll be okay.
That's a big if, because he.
And then the shoulder, but you throw Nomura in there, and that really helps to solidify it, I think.
All right.
And then I guess it'd be Fujioka would be the other one.
Takahiro Fujioka, he's a
the Chibolote kid.
Left-handed pitcher, you went to Chiba, okay.
Yeah, and he'll step in right away, he should.
What's his upside?
Well, same kind of deal. He's got pretty good stuff, but he can command it real well, and, you know, he's a bulldog out there on the mound. You know, he can go out there and pitch through adversity. He knows how to make adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
Maturity-wise, he's probably a little bit advanced for a 22-year-old kid. Same deal as Nomura. I mean, they're style-wise, they're not the same guy, but, you know, ability-wise, I'd say they're pretty close to each other.
All right, and your number one guy?
Probably Sugano. You know, he's... the kid's got pretty good stuff, man. It's no secret.
Where would you rate his stuff?
What do you mean?
I mean, compared to other pitchers.
In Japan?
In Japan.
Well, I mean, in the draft, he was probably the best in the draft, I'd say. I mean, that's not, he was, just pure stuff-wise, he's, yeah, obviously better, but he's got as good a command as, anybody else that was taken this year. So, well, I
this
mean,
is a real shame, yeah, because he's not gonna play.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's interesting. There's always something like that going on. But, yeah, I don't know. It's anytime you take a year off, especially at the age of 22, yeah, it's a big developmental year, you know, and it's not going to be easy for him.
Yeah.
And throwing on the side and throwing in games that don't count isn't the same as pitching in competition.
No, it's not.
So, but, I mean, if anybody's going to be able to do it, it might be him. And he has thrown a lot, so maybe the layoff will do him some good. But, you know, mentality-wise, the mental side of things, he's going to have to be real careful of. It'd be easy to overlook that. But he's going to have to keep himself sharp mentally, and that's a big part of it.
Yeah, Tomoyuki Sugano, if you guys don't know, or maybe a lot of you do know, but the Nippon Ham Fighters and the Yomiuri Giants both selected him, and the Fighters won the rights to negotiate with him, but he turned them down and said he'd rather sit out a year than join a team he wasn't really interested in joining. Plus, his uncle is the manager of the Giants, so he wanted to play under his uncle. And so you've got him as the top player in the draft who will be sitting with us, basically, in the audience watching games this year.
I'm sure he'll find something to get into. I don't think you know, he's going to have a lot of opportunities. To stay straight, but, you know, the mental side of things he's going to have to do on his own. You know, he's not going to have a lot of help with that. And at 22 years old, to have, you know, enough maturity to do that is a big deal. So,
all right, so of your top six, I guess, who do you think has the best opportunity? They went to the right club and that they're going to have the opportunity to play and they're going to be able to produce. Who out of that group?
In 2012, you mean?
Yeah, next year.
Probably Fujioka, Nomura, and Ito, I think.
Okay.
You know, there's always some surprises, but those are the guys that would be the obvious pick.
All right, well, it'll be a while, but we'll look for them and see how you did in your rating. Here.
Yeah, we'll see.
All right, bud, always a pleasure to have you on.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, take care of yourself.
All right, you too.
Thanks for the chat. All right, so Dave's top six is what it turned out to be.
Which is fine with me. I think it, yeah, concise is best and to the point.
Thanks so much, Dave. He's a very busy man, and he's always very gracious with his time, and we appreciate it. Thanks
yes,
a lot, bud.
Yes, sir.
And with all that said, it's Sugano who caused all the angst and drew all the attention.
Sure.
He actually kept the draft in the news cycle for a longer period of time. Otherwise, it would have been kind of boring.
Right. Well, this is something, as Dave said, there's something like this happens every year, and that's pretty much true. It's either there's somebody who didn't want to play for a certain team and got drafted by them, and there's always that question of whether they'll sign. And almost every year, that's a player who wants to go to the Giants, although not exclusively.
Not exclusively. Well, so Sugano, yeah, had this monkey wrench fired into his plans.
Right.
You know, he wanted to go and play with for his uncle.
Yep, Hudson Arihara.
And you know, the Fighters just decided to go for it.
Right.
Which apparently Dave said he was the best available player.
Yep.
Pitcher, at least in the draft. And it kind of makes sense if they would have been able to convince him to play, and now he's going to sit out.
Right. Now he's going to sit out, and this points to a lot of problems that there is with the draft, and I'm going to save that for just a minute.
Go right ahead, sir.
Oh, okay, shall I?
It's
well,
rant time.
Okay.
Oh. We brought this soapbox for you exclusively. I'm just gonna.
I see it's got my name on
it. I'm just going to stick a toe on it, but it's yours to stand on.
Thanks, bud. All right. Well, okay, Sugano caused a lot of problems because he didn't want to play for the Nippon Ham Fighters. Now, the problem with the draft, first of all, as a lot of some of you are familiar with and perhaps some of you aren't, that the draft has really changed Japanese baseball since it was introduced in 1965. And it's changed it because before that, it was, was it in the U.S. before their draft, it was a case of major league teams, or in this case Japanese NBB teams, literally negotiating with every amateur player that they wanted, and the players able to choose, basically sell their services to whatever team they wanted to play for and for whatever contract they decided to accept.
Mm-hmm.
So there was nothing fair or competitive about it. So the problem, now the draft was instituted not to institute competitive balance, which it has. Before the long-term effects of the draft were felt, we had these great dynasties in Japan. We had the Nishitetsu Lions and Nankai Hawks and the Hankyu Braves in the Pacific League, and we had the essentially the Yomiuri Giants in the Central League.
Right.
And then after that, the Hiroshima Carp at the very end of the at the point when there were still a lot of players who entered before the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now those drafts, what happened after the draft was the number of dynasties dropped dramatically and the impact of the dynasties dropped dramatically. The Giants V9 era was when they won 9 Japan series in a row, was essentially compiled with players, with a few, exception of a few players such as ace pitcher Tsune Horiuchi, was the product of players who came before the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Horiuchi was the very first first round picks in 1965. Okay, after that the dynasties dropped away, and so there was a form of competitive balance that existed essentially until the institution of free agency in 1994. Okay, so anyway, so a lot of people are used to the competitive balance in the draft, but the real purpose of the draft was to keep amateur players from charging their true market value for their services and getting into a bidding war.
Right.
And when I say true market value, people would say, well, how dare these amateurs ask for this much money, but people are worth what people can get. That's the way the market works.
Right.
So if teams were willing to pay that much for these guys, that's what they were worth. So the teams didn't want to pay what the players were worth, because once players sign contracts, they don't have to pay them a fraction of what they're worth.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have no, they can't play for anybody else.
Right. They can basically, you do this and that's it.
That's right. Or until we don't want you, cluttering up our roster anymore. At which point they're free agents.
It's sort of indentured slavery.
It's essentially, well, it's not slavery. It's indentured servitude.
Servants.
However, it's indefinite, as Don Nomura pointed out to me the other day. When I think this is sort of an obtuse example, he said, "Well, when you're a 1 year away from free agency, the team could leave you on the minor leagues. But you get no value to them being in the minor leagues. There's no point to keeping you."
Right.
So they can in theory keep you indefinitely, especially because there's no minor league free agency in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now the problem with the draft then is one, is that it's an it's a collusive arrangement between the teams to deprive amateur players of their marketing rights.
Okay.
So I don't like it on that purpose. I'm a free market guy. I believe that people should be able to play, work where they want, play for whom they want. And the problem with baseball is that because they have the reserve clause, it doesn't quite work like that. They want people who are locked into long-term contracts, whether they like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So anyway, we have this situation where, as John said, it's a case of, you know, actually I think John's going to get to this, but players are basically expected to sign for whoever drafts them, you know, just shut up and play baseball. Because, I mean, this is a large expectation from people who have played professional baseball, managers and so on. You know, you just play for the team who drafted you. Don't complain about it. And then when you're good enough to be a free agent, you can choose where you want to go. In my mind, that's kind of ridiculous, but I'm not running a baseball team. Okay. Now, the problem with the Japanese draft is that it's neither fish nor fowl. The draft is originally organized to deprive players of their rights. It then assigned rights by lottery. Every player picked in the first round, every player could be picked by multiple teams. Any player could be, the same teams could pick the same player, and then the teams, however many teams pick that player, would draw his name out of a hat. Now the teams losing the draft lottery would then pick another player, would have another round to pick another player. Now if they pick the same player as another team, that would go into a lottery, and it goes on and on and on.
Right, and before, ever since I took this job, this is going to be my 7th year starting in January.
Wow.
And I know, you're getting old. And,
thank you. I am.
You've been informing me and trying to tell me about this draft process, and I'm still learning, and you know, if I had to take a test on it tomorrow, I'm sure I'd fail. but
well, the first thing you need to know is that that draft lottery now only exists in the first round, and that from then on it's a strict waiver order. It's essentially best worst to best.
Right.
The last place team in one league, and then the last place team in the other league, fifth place, fourth, and so on, and then the order's reversed for the next round. So it's very it's pretty simple.
And then the other thing that I remember is you said it keeps going until all teams pass. Essentially,
right.
Well, do not select the player.
That is correct. There's a maximum number of players that could be taken in the draft, and I believe the number is 130. Now, that number, it's usually actually closer to 100. Most teams don't have that many roster spots to pick as many players as they like. If they offloaded a lot of players, it's possible. But essentially, you know, the problem now is the Sugano issue. Now, the Sugano issue is bad for a lot of reasons. Players can sit out if they don't like the team they're going to. You know, this is the same as it is in the majors. However, if you do not sign a player, a lot of bad things happen for baseball if a guy who wants to turn professional cannot because the team is unavailable. And what happens? The fans are deprived of the player's value. Baseball is deprived of that player's value. That player is deprived of a year of his career. Now, what happens?
Lose.
Yeah, it's a lose for everybody. So that's why I like the free market solution. To be honest, players should play where they want to play. Now, how do you get around that? Well, you could say if players could play where they wanted, the prices would be high. But I got news for you. The prices are already high.
Right.
And there's a lot of under-the-table payments for players who are top-round draft choices. Not as much as there were a few years ago. Okay, so that's one thing, is that talent gets left out of the market in order to preserve a system that is messed up to begin with.
Right.
Okay, now the other bad thing that happens here is that the team who drafts a player, the Fighters used essentially the most valuable draft pick in the last draft, and the first player they will be able to sign was their second round pick.
Mm-hmm.
They get no pick.
They get
nothing.
They pick Sugano. They couldn't work out. You know, they couldn't convince him to play for him. So they essentially lost that first round pick.
Now, why this system exists? Why don't they get a pick in the following draft the way they do in the majors? I don't know, but I'm guessing the reason is that the most powerful teams, the teams that players want to play for, most often want to play for, don't want to give teams compensation picks, because if they did, there'd be less right now there's a great disadvantage to a team for picking a player who said, like last year, Hirokazu Sawamura, I'm going to play for the Giants or I'm going to go to the major leagues.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody wanted to pick him, because if they pick him and they don't sign him, they get nothing.
Right, and I think there has to be a compensatory pick there, because essentially your team, you talked about competitive balance,
right,
and you're effectively ruining that entire
concept. You're punishing teams that are less valuable, less popular.
So, and one of my issues with the draft is basically you pick guys who you've already worked out a deal with, and you know you're going to sign them, and
right,
they know you're going to pick them, and it's not really a draft.
Right. I'm against the draft for every reason.
Well, I mean, you know what? I think maybe because what is the service time that they have to acquire? Is it 9 years or 8 years?
It's 8 years for domestic free agency and nine years for international free agency.
I think a solution to that would be that if the player is that good that and they want to be able to play for whatever team they can go to, just half in that, just shorten it to 4 years. And then, you know, you do your time. It's just like the service. You know, you do your time, 4 years, you get out, and you go to the team you want to go to.
My solution is much more radical. My solution is to take basically get rid of the reserve clause and make every player a free agent and to play with his team as long as he signs a contract for. Now, what this means is, now the reason amateurs are so valuable is because once you sign them, you can lock them in for a maximum number of years.
Right.
Therefore, they are essentially more valuable than guys who are on your roster now, who are actually better players. And this is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. But they're more valuable at that instant in a free market because you can lock them into long-term contracts. Now, if you want to offer the guy a long-term contract because he's a very valuable player, then go ahead, then you give him the money. But the fact is, if every player is a free agent and able to sign whatever long-term contracts they want, there is essentially no shortage of talent.
Yeah, but do you sign these players to long-term contracts? I mean, guys get hurt, guys sign contracts and stop performing, guys...
Sure,
I mean,
there's a lot of risk in that. There is a lot of risk, sure, but there's no more risk than... but then you're not overpaying players just to keep them.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, the whole deal with me is, you know, I wouldn't even call this thing a draft. I would call it the acquisition slash selection meeting. Because basically they're there to acquire guys they know who are going to sign them, or they're selecting guys who other teams are selecting. So there's your acquisition and selection. But, you know, it's all kind of a song and dance. And that's why when Sedano was picked by the Fighters, it threw the whole thing off.
Sure, and which I love.
Which was nice. It was good to have some news out there. And I was hoping he would sign with the Fighters. I mean,
yeah, as did I.
You know, it'd be good. They're going to lose Darvish. They could replace him with a guy who could conceivably help him this upcoming season or the next.
Sure.
And he's got ace potential.
I think Sugano could have helped him this year. I think he could have been a big player this year. I don't have high expectations for draft choices, but if he's the best, then he could be pretty good.
Right. So, the whole thing is convoluted and confusing anyway, and now, you know, yeah, it's not going to get any better. I don't know that there's a solution out there, but I'd like to see them change some things.
Well, I think the answer is, the first answer would be the easy answer, the non-radical Jim Allen, anarchy. I mean, I have no love for any sort of collusion, and Japanese baseball is American style sports leagues are an essentially model of monopoly systems. Hate them.
Fraud with it. Yeah.
Yeah. They're all about rigging the bidding. They're all about everything's fixed. It's a fixed game.
Change the draft, people.
Yeah.
Change it.
So the simple thing would be to give teams compensation for players who don't sign.
At the very least.
That's it. And then that way, what we could have is, wow, you know how many people would pick Sugano? You know how many teams would take Sugano in the draft?
Everybody,
12 teams would try to sign him.
Right.
Okay, and the team that doesn't gets a compensation pick because the cost of not signing him is much lower.
Right.
So now that's the problem, because if you're the Yomiuri Giants, you don't want every team in Japan drafting your guy. But
if indeed he is your guy.
Yeah, well, in this case he is.
Yeah, he was.
Right,
yeah,
okay.
He was.
Right, okay, so that's probably the easiest, that's the easy solution to the draft is the compensation. But blow it up is my best advice.
Okay.
And the reserve clause too.
All right.
Okay,
well, it's on to the MVP voting now. I went to cover it. I was there. I actually had heard the day before who the winners were. And it wasn't that much of a shock to actually go there and you know, look and see everybody celebrating these guys. However, looking at the voting,
yeah,
just made my jaw just, I mean, you know, like I said earlier, I'm just shocked. And I thought they'd get it right.
Yeah.
And I have no problem with Asao in the Central League.
Okay. You hear silence.
Not silence.
No, that's silence for me.
I didn't vote for him for MVP, but I had him up there, and I have no problem with it. And my idea is, or my concept of the voting is, if you can vote a guy in like that based on the numbers, regardless of where his team
right
finished, if he really, you know, if they really had value in the numbers, they would have picked Yoshimi because he actually pitched more innings and made a bigger impact in that respect. However, I went through Asao's game.
Okay.
Went through every game that he threw.
Right.
And as the customers come in here, he pitched in 10 games that ended in a tie.
Right.
He pitched in 12 games that they lost.
Mm-hmm.
He pitched in 57 victories.
Okay. Makes it sound like he won 57 games.
No, I'm not saying that he won 57 games. I'm saying that he contributed to 57
okay
wins, whereas Yoshimi did not. I have no problem with Asao being the Central League winner of the MVP. Another thing he did was he pitched in 36 one-run games. And you know he's a seventh, well, maybe sixth, but generally seventh, eighth, and ninth inning guy. Pitch in 36 one-run games.
Right.
And the Dragons ended up 27-9 in those games. Mm-hmm. I just think his impact was more, you know, his total impact was more than what Yoshimi gave him, and I'm fine with him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you want to argue that or not.
Well, I'm skeptical.
Because?
Just by the sheer number of innings. I mean, if he pitched in a lot of one-run games, you might even get him a little extra credit for that.
He had 100 innings. It's not like he pitched in 57
games. Yeah, and Yoshimi had twice as many.
I know he had twice as many, but...
So you have to argue that that Asao was so much better in his one... You have to argue that he was more valuable in his 100 innings than Yoshimi was in 200, and I find that argument really, really hard to do.
I'm not sure that I have to argue that, and of course, as I already stated, I did not vote for him for MVP. However, I understand it, and right. I don't think that he had to be better in the 100 innings because he pitched fewer innings. I think if they had a guy who could do what he did in some of those games, they would have put him in there.
Right.
And because they put him in there 79 times, that's a club record. And he set the previous record. I looked it up because I got it wrong last week. It was 72 games was a previous club high for one season. He pitched in 79.
Right.
He's pitching in 79 games. They need him in 79 games.
Right.
Because they didn't have anybody else to go to. Now, Yoshimi pitched in fewer games, but he had more innings. And his innings were just as valuable. I'm not giving...
His innings are less valuable because he's a starter and he starts out when the game's... When the game's tied,
I understand that. But again, this guy pitched in games that were tied or one run games, either they were down a run or up a run. I value his work.
Right. Well, of course, the other one is you can say that. This is kind of a silly argument. It might be construed as a silly argument, but every game Yoshimi pitched was closer than one run because it started 0-0. He had to make that game.
Again, Asao pitched in 10 games that were tied, though.
Right.
And
Yoshimi pitched in 29.
And the other ones were one-run games, so it's not like you.
And all of Yoshimi's were tied.
Well, at the beginning.
Yeah. And he was responsible for not blowing them.
I understand it. Well, you guys, listen, listeners, you guys give us your opinions because I'm not arguing that he should have been. I totally back it,
right.
But I didn't vote for him.
Right.
I didn't vote for him, but I understand it, and I'm fine with it. And as shocking as it was, it didn't drop my jaw like the selection of Seiichi Uchikawa of the SoftBank Hawks.
I think I do need to mention, you know, as what I was talking about with John, is that the argument for Asao is an interesting pick. I don't like it for the sheer fact that I am not persuaded that somebody who pitches in 100 innings can... Regardless of how good they were, he wasn't perfect. Regardless of how good he wasn't perfect. And that it's really hard for somebody who pitches in 100 innings to be as good as somebody who's really at the top of his league. Although he was, in my mind, he was the second. Yoshimi was the second best pitcher in the Central League this year, behind Utsumi. But that difference, I think, is so hard to make up. No matter how hard you get, it's essentially saying that it's essentially like saying a guy who came in and had 50, you know, 70 pinch hits in the season is an MVP. Nobody's going to argue that, but if it's in that category, the guy impacted 70 games with big pinch hits, we'll make him the MVP.
Well, you know what? I can't argue that, but I mean,
I think that's the same argument.
At bat versus. I mean, I'm sorry, one at bat versus a pitcher getting 1 to 3 outs is kind of different.
No, it isn't, because you're still arguing. Let's say a guy has 70 pinch hits, maybe in 100 at bats. Now you're comparing them to people who have 300 and 400 at bats. It's almost essentially the same thing.
I'm not there with you. I'm sorry. If a guy gets, you know, that's one at bat, you know, you might, I don't know what he does. Let's say he gets, you know, some extra base hits and drives in some runs and all that stuff. It's still one at bat versus a pitcher getting
three outs, maybe four outs.
I don't know.
You know. Right, three. And then you're talking about somebody who got twice as many outs.
I understand that, too. I didn't pick him, but I'm going for it.
So I think that there's that point of it. So I wouldn't argue it. Anyway, but I like it because, and I'll say this just very briefly, because if you pick an MVP, he absolutely has to be, you know, if he's the most valuable, in my mind, if he's the most valuable player in the league, he cannot be second most valuable at what he does. He can't be the second best player in his category if he's the MVP.
Yeah.
It defies logic. This is the kind of logic that only works in Japan. And there's no doubt that Asao is the best setup guy slash closer in Japan. He's probably the best closer in Japan right now. So to give him the MVP is saying this guy is so far ahead of the category. Now this kind of logic should have carried over to the Pacific League.
You think? Because it's based on numbers. And it's because we based this one on numbers, why didn't we base the Pacific League MVP on numbers? I just about lost it. I really did. I couldn't believe. And then I got there and I looked at the voting, and you know, Uchikawa had 757. I don't know what do they call these points.
Yeah.
Points. Meaning he got 120 first place votes, and then not Okawari-kun, not Nakamura Takeya. We got Masahiro Tanaka, the pitcher for
right.
the Eagles,
right.
with only 43 first place votes, and Nakamura got 21.
Amazing.
So they didn't respect anything he did.
Nope. You know, you played for a third place team. Okay, here's your consolation prize. You know, you get here's your lollipop. Thanks for playing. See you next year.
I don't even think they gave him a lollipop. I think they just called him a sucker.
Oh, yeah. Well, no. I think that's extreme, but that's how we feel, because we were pretty much agreed that Nakamura was the outstanding player in Japan this year. There was no question about it. And then my problem with Uchikawa is a good candidate, and I would give Uchikawa the vote well ahead of Masahiro Tanaka. Now, the problem with Masahiro Tanaka is, again, the way that the voting is done. People look at, pitchers have outstanding numbers, he's the MVP. They usually, you know, if a pitcher wins a lot of games, they won't make him the MVP.
Right.
The problem with Tanaka is Tanaka plays in somewhat of a pitcher's park. He plays in the Pacific League, a pitcher's league. He played in this year.
A pitcher's year.
And his numbers were how much better than Darvish's? A little bit.
Slightly.
And Darvish was a little bit better than Wada, and Wada was a little bit better than somebody else. You know, there were a gang of five or six pitchers in Japan who were not significantly worse than Masahiro Tanaka. I think you put Shohei Tateyama, the three Central League guys in there, and you've
sure.
got and Utsumi and Yoshimi, and I think Sugiuchi wasn't much worse either. He had a bad win-loss record, but he was fairly effective. Okay, so we've got these really good pitchers, and the guy from Oryx is good. So we've got this, and just the very tip of the iceberg is Tanaka. Now you've got Nakamura, who's on another planet. Well, he's not quite on another planet, but
he's out of this world.
He's in orbit. Everybody else is going, you know, this big chubby guy is floating up there, and nobody knows how to levitate except him. That's what it's like. Nobody did close to what he did this year.
Well, I saw the PL selection of Uchikawa absolutely embarrassing for the Japanese media. That's the only way I could calmly report this to you guys. I mean, the writers and reporters who voted for him. If this were on a stage with a network,
right.
with the power of like the likes of ESPN or something,
right.
the voters here would just be destroyed and stripped of their voting rights and possibly have their passes revoked. I mean, this was not—it wasn't even close—and they blew it. And I'm embarrassed for them. And you know, what can I say? I was at the announcement and I decided to ask a few reporters, just ask around and say,
right.
hey, you know, what about this? Because you obviously based the Central League on what Yoshimi had done
right.
versus what Asao had done numbers-wise.
Right.
Why didn't you carry that over to the Pacific League? You're the same people.
Right.
You know, did you have an out-of-body experience? I mean, I wanted to say, have you people lost your minds? But
right.
then I realized maybe you have to have a mind in the first place
oh.
to lose it.
You go, Dan. Well, okay. Now, the thing about the voting, I think a couple of things that, because John and I both voted for the first time this year,
right.
and you realize some of the constraints that the voters are under. You know, when I choose my voters, I tend to not look at the starting pitchers too much because I don't have a big belief they can be as valuable. But I look through and I see who are the best hitters, and then I look what positions are these guys playing. Now, Nakamura didn't need much credit for third base, but he's a decent third baseman. You know, so you got to give him credit for that. But the other thing I noticed is, and what I expected, my favorite player in the Central League, I think, was easily the most valuable player, was Shinosuke Abe of the Giants, and he got all of 5 points. Now, Abe was not noticeable because the guys are under some time constraint to do the voting. I just look it up in my database. You know, I search for guys who have more than 400 at-bats, 400 plate appearances. And what I find is nobody had an offensive year like Shinosuke Abe. Now, each of the writers who don't have that database, they look at the league leaders, and Abe is not listed. So he can't be the MVP because he's not listed on the leaders. Number one, if you want to be an MVP, be listed among a group of leaders.
Have enough at-bats.
Have enough at-bats, have enough saves, have enough hold points, have enough wins. You don't get credit for being good. You only get credit if you're among the listed leaders. So I swear if Abe had had 20 more at-bats, maybe a couple of more home runs, he probably would have finished higher in the voting than 27th.
Well, you know, I complained to a lot of other of our reporters there. I actually wrote a first draft of the story that I was there, and I had to have it I got a kickback and said, so you're going to have to rewrite this and take some of your opinion out of it. And so I rewrote it and made it kind of straight. And this is the only platform we have to vent. And so it's been so long that I'm actually calmed down now, if you can believe that.
I know. I know. The microphone was too hot to touch there for a couple of weeks. That's why we had to hold off there.
But what can we do to change this attitude? I mean, you know, Jason Koskri of the Japan Times wrote a really good article or a column about the fact that maybe on the premise that it's just a first place team award.
Right.
It's not an MVP award, and you know that's a good premise. But I just think I think you're giving the reporters too much credit. I don't think they think like that. I think they're programmed. They're like little computers and. I'm going to spend the whole next season complaining to every reporter I can and tell them, hey, you know what, this guy is really great and you guys screwed it up last year. Let's get it right this year.
Wow.
That's my New Year's resolution.
Wow.
It's not going to be about me. I'm not going to deal with myself in 213. I'm going to deal with the idiot report. Oh, I'm sorry, 212.
You end up dealing with yourself, though, because, I think the other thing, I have to ask people how I think what we need to do is document the process that goes into naming these people doing. I mean, I know what I'm doing.
I know what I'm going to ask them. I'm just looking, and I said it jokingly last time. They look at the 3, 4, and 5 batters of the first place team, and they pick one. And they look at the home runs and RBIs, and they go away. I'm gonna spend all next year.
Well, they should. I mean, but it's still outrageous to me that they still miss Nakamura. It was like he was like the elephant in the room, and everybody was saying, "Well, there's nothing here. We're empty."
Yeah, have a seat anywhere. Plenty of room.
and it was so obvious.
Nonsense! You could fit in here.
It was amazing. So that is. I have to guess. Looking at it. That the process is something of groups of reporters talking, who are you going to vote for? I'm going to have a go at John here because he had somebody he wanted to pick and he didn't give somebody a vote who would have been his, for example, he didn't give anybody a third place vote in one of the leagues because he didn't want the wrong person to win.
Well, it didn't stop him.
No, but the point is, you got to go for what you believe in, and don't be worrying about other people. This is the thing. I think that absolutely infects, that creates this wave of idiocy.
Well, I think I saw it coming. I saw the curveball. I was trying to tell everybody that there's a curve coming, and they struck out anyway.
It's amazing, amazing. Then these are the same people who thought. Darvish, Hisashi Iwakuma was the Pacific League MVP a couple of years ago for a fifth place team because he had 20 wins. I'm like, just get your head out your butt.
If that number is such a big number, then vote for
Nakamura.
Come on. All right. Well, we can go on forever, I'm sure.
We are going on forever.
We are going on forever. Yeah, send your comments. You know, you've got the new system for MP3s, so send your comments that way and let us know what you think. We're going to move on to old faces and new places. And
yeah, baby.
We've got, player movements. We got skipper movements. You know, we kind of got a disappointing story for the Yokohama Bay Stars, in my opinion.
Yeah, Michael West Bay would have been the choice. They missed it. I'm telling you.
They've already swung and missed
more
pitches this offseason.
I'll be honest. As much as and I love Michael, but you do need a guy who's going to command respect, and Michael would command respect for his knowledge, but not for being in the dugout.
Oh.
And the guy they did pick after their long, intensive search.
Well, in their long, intensive search, we had Tsuyoshi Shinjo. We had Masumi?
Kuwata.
We had Kimiyasu Kudo. We had Warren Cromartie. Jim and I had West Bay. There were so
Wayne Grassick was
Wayne
another.
Wayne Grassick was another one of our candidates for this job. And where the hell did Nakahata come from?
I think they let him out of his cage. I don't know. Maybe his sentence ran out and he was available.
Well, I was ready to rip on them for the choice of Kudo.
Yeah.
And it's because, you know, as far as I know, these people have never owned a baseball team. Get someone who knows the direction you want to head in and who's been down the road before. And they were going to go with a rookie.
They were going to go with a rookie
who hadn't even coached. In fact,
he hadn't even coached. He hadn't even sat and watched games from the sideline because he's been pitching all the time.
Yeah, I'm quite sure that he was probably wanted to write his name in on the roster, and that's probably why they didn't want to put him on the team. He's going to want to try to pitch. But, I mean, you know, I was going to rip on that. And less than 48 hours after talks break down with him, boom, they got a new manager.
And it's Kiyoshi Nakahata. And I just dread the thought. Who is Nakahata? He was a Giants first base, originally a third baseman. He competed with Tatsunori Hara for the Giants' third base spot and lost because they gave it to Hara. They moved him over to first base, and he sulked about that. He was a gifted natural hitter. He had fairly good coverage, and he just smacked line drives like he invented this, you know, like he invented the process. He was ruined early in his career by he's a big guy and tried to make him into a home run hitter, which he wasn't. Screwed up his swing. He became a lousy hitter because of that. When O left and Motoshi Fujita became the Giants manager in 1989, Nakahata's career, well, I think it was, yeah, 1989. He had this one great year for Fujita. He got hurt, but he could hit doubles like they were going out of style. He was without a doubt the most undisciplined hitter, the base runner with the poorest judgment I've ever seen in my life. And this is the guy you want running your team, a guy who believes in everything is about guts, who says, you know, we have to separate his persona. He has a persona. He's a very charismatic fellow and a likable guy and a player's guy.
Seen him on the news and as a commentator.
Yeah, he was the mood maker, they like to call spark plug kind of guy, a team motivator, similar to, I guess in that respect, similar to Alex Ramirez, you know, keep everybody, you know, up and buoyant, you know, whenever the chips are down. And that's something, you know, that's a plus. But he showed nothing as a player that he has any smarts at all. And he was quite shocked. He expressed disappointment that nobody had offered him a managing job in the last 15 years, and I think the answer is nobody was stupid enough to come along and do it.
Well, we have a winner. I mean, you know, if guys like Kudo and Nakahata are the answer, can somebody help me out on what the question is? I got no idea.
I don't know.
The good thing is they picked up a guy like Ramirez, who's like an on-field coach.
Sure.
And, you know, I promise you this upcoming season I will sit down and do a kind of an extended interview with Alex just to show you how insightful he is and how knowledgeable he is about all the pitchers and catchers and hitting.
Yep.
You know, and since he signed with the Daystars, you know, that's great. And, you know, it might even, because this is a guy Warren Cromartie played with, Nakahata.
Right.
So it might be an avenue for him to get over here and maybe just coach or something.
That would be good.
That would be good because that's a good direction for them. At least the guy's done it before. But
right.
I don't really know. I don't get these moves and the fact that it was so soon after talks broke down with Kudo makes me think that it was in the works and that they were looking for it out and they got it. And they wanted to bring him in and, you know, maybe they were negotiating with both of them at the same time. I don't know, but it seemed kind of fishy to me.
Well, I don't know fishy, but it was weird and they've got Nakahata and I just, on the good side is that the top of the Central League will probably be less competitive now with Ochiai no longer managing the Chunichi Dragons.
Right.
There's a good chance the Dragons won't be in the top three unless they turn, you know, they have some talent improvements. I don't see that happening.
I don't either.
But, you know, who knows? Takagi was not a horrible manager, but he was a cipher. He would have been a better choice to manage Yokohama than Nakahata for sure.
Right, right. Well, I mean, Nakahata. I was going to start referring to him as Plan B, and I think I'll still do that this season.
Well, I think we can call him. I think Kyoshi.
Just B.
Kyoshi is going to be the special K.
Special K. I don't know. He might mistake the B for Baystar, so I think I'm going to have to call him Plan B, not just B. What's up?
Okay.
But, all right, well, what's happening in Yokohama? They've lost their third baseman now.
Sure. Well, they have a third baseman.
Well, they lost their starting third baseman, Shuichi Murata, who is going to go over to the Giants. But
right.
Then, you know, they picked up Alex. So that's basically a swap of cleanup guys.
Right.
Now, at the very instant, I thought, well, the Giants are going to get the better of this deal. But you know what? As I just said, with the knowledge that Alex has.
Right.
And he's going to bring to that team with those players, whatever deficiencies he has on defense and whatever deficiencies he has, if indeed his skills are declining.
His defensive skills are declining.
Oh, no, I'm talking about at the plate. We know his defensive skills. Yeah,
but I don't see it at the plate.
Yeah, I'm not. If indeed his skills are declining at the plate, they still have a good hitter who's going to be able to have a strong influence on the entire team.
Right.
The mentality, the preparation. Everything.
Well, I think the bad sign for Alex was, I think, the 15 in the low number of doubles. Usually when players' doubles start disappearing, the rest of the power starts to go with it. So we'll see about that, and we hope that was kind of an odd blip caused by the odd ball. But the Baystars also have I can't remember the guy. This kid's a horse. He'll be a third year out of high school, and he's about he's about 192 centimeters tall. He can play third base.
Tsutsugo.
And he's a hitter.
Yes.
And
yes.
So he's basically going to get third base.
Tsutsugo played really well last year for a short time at the end.
And he played pretty well in a couple of games the year before as a rookie. So I think he's not going to be overmatched. He could be comparable to Sho Nakata. And that's a plus, and a plus that he can actually play third base.
Right. And the Giants instantly get better defensively because they'll be able to put somebody in left field who's probably a better defensive player than Alex.
Right.
And Murata, you know, he does okay at third. I mean, you have to close your eyes a couple three times a month, but otherwise he'll be all right. So I think they're going to improve defensively. And speaking of the Giants picking up players,
it doesn't stop.
It looks like they're going to get what would we call him? Refer to him as former Hawks ace or one-time Hawks ace or two-time Hawks ace, Toshiya.
Former Pacific League MVP and former Central League Japan Series MVP, Toshiya Sugiuchi.
Sugiuchi's coming over. And I read somewhere that DJ Holton was going to be a Giant.
That has been the story. You should get in touch with Mr. Holton.
I haven't seen him, but I doubt
him.
Well, you know, once things go in, we'll be the first to get an interview. I can guarantee you that.
Okay.
But, so it looks like they're going to be revamped, and it's going to be a vastly different Central League when we open up on opening day next year.
The Tigers are going to be older still. But, you know, there's a lot of good players. Speaking of old players, before we get to good players, speaking of old players and the move that really intrigues me is the acquisition by the Chunichi Dragons. Okay, let's just do a little backstory here. There was a player once for the Chunichi Dragons they didn't like because he was too slow and too fat. Until he started hitting home runs.
And this was back in like 91?
This is the mid-90s. Well, this is the early 90s. Yeah. And he didn't really have a defensive position. But he could hit like crazy. Every time they brought him up to the Central League, he hit like crazy. And then they said, well, you know, but he's not the defensive player we want. So they sent him back to the minors. And then he hit like crazy. Every spring he'd come up, and he'd usually start the season with the team and kind of fall apart. And they'd send him back down, see if we were right. Well, one year, when he was 27 years old, he was so hot that they couldn't send him down because they couldn't tell people, you know, this guy hit 400, 450 in the spring, but we don't think he's a good defensive player. So they kept him, and he won the Central League home run crown in his first year as a regular.
Right.
And then 4 years later, well, he's too slow, and he doesn't really have a good defensive position. So they traded him for essentially a washed-up closer, Masafumi Hirai. And the guy's name is Takeshi Yamasaki. Well, he did 2 years he had a two-year sentence with Oryx. And then they released him. And they released him, and then he went to Rakuten, you know, where his career was essentially over, and I think he hit 240 home runs with the Rakuten Golden Eagles.
240?
I should check that.
Yes, he was a very successful hitter, and you know, Alonzo Powell used to always tell me about this guy, and he'd say, man, you know, they really dogged this guy, what Alonzo would say. They'd bring him up for a little while, and they'd put him down, and they just never gave him a chance, and the guy could hit, the guy could help us out. And, of course, in the mid-90s, those teams bashed the ball at Nagoya Stadium.
Sure.
They hit a bunch of home runs, and he was one of the guys who could really, you know, bash the ball. But when they got the dome, they wanted somebody, you know, they wanted faster players who could play in almost any position. They wanted to be able to shift guys around, you know, from outfield to first base when they needed to, maybe tighten up the defense in later innings. And he was the odd guy out because he was so slow. And they put him at first base, but he actually broke his wrist
right.
in 1999. So they had to, you know, they said, well, he's not going to really be a good first baseman either. Let's get rid of him. So there, you know, years later, he bashes a bunch of home runs with the Eagles. And do we have that number now?
I'm looking. And about 190 home runs with the Eagles in seven seasons. And now he's released. And the Chunichi Dragons have said this guy who was too old,
too old and too slow
11 years ago, and 190 about 200 home runs ago, is a guy they want.
And he doesn't have a position. I read his quotes. He says, "I'm going to challenge Blanco for first base." You know,
is he going to try to shoot him in a duel?
What's he going to bring? Maybe he's going to bring the bat out there first base. Might be a good idea. Sounds like a plan. I don't know. We'll see. But, yeah, it makes no sense. But we've got players going all over the place. Now, we haven't kept up with it in terms of tweeting everything, and I haven't put every move and every contract signing on the homepage. But a lot of things going on. It's been really exciting in the off season so far. I don't know. Yamasaki back to the Dragons? Not hardly. That's all I have to say about it. I mean, he might – you know, they kept – The former Bay Stars first baseman?
Saiki.
They kept him on the roster almost the whole season, and he didn't do much of anything. So,
yeah.
You know, he can be a guy who sits there with his arms across, you know, on the bench and yells at the younger players.
Yep, that's what he was good at.
Gives him some direction. He can do that. I can do that, but he can do it better. Well, there's a lot of things going on in Japanese baseball in the off season. We're probably going to try to do a show next week. Not sure, but we're
looking at it.
We're making plans, and then after that, we'll be off for a couple of weeks and come back in the first week of January.
Yep.
Refreshed.
All right.
Some of us who are going to the States.
And some of us who aren't.
And then we will pick up with an interview. I'm planning to interview one of the guys I know who talks to a lot of the Latin players. So
okay.
He's going to give us some real good insight on Ramirez and Blanco and other guys like that.
Excellent.
And we'll try to keep up on, you know, what Mr. Nakahata is doing or not doing with the Bay Stars.
Well, it's going to be a little hard in January because he's going to be the same Genki guy he is in December.
Well, we'll figure out who he's going to have as coaches and all that stuff if they haven't decided already. I haven't been up on that. I've just been feeling sorry for the Bay Stars just since, you know,
since
the beginning of last week. So. And again, a reminder, we want to invite you to send your comments to us or questions via MP3 files so we can play them on the show. If you have an IC recorder or the latest version of Firefox or Explorer even, I saw it on there.
Okay.
There's an online radio recorder that you can use, and you can make a file and easily transfer it by email. If neither of those work for you, there's a free software called WavePad Sound Editor that you can download, and then as long as you keep it under a minute, we'll play it on the show, and we'll appreciate you doing that.
Excellent.
Make sure you put your name and address on there.
We'll interact a little more.
Interact with you guys, and be cool. It'll be great. A special thanks to the good folks of White Smoke here in Azaba Juban for allowing us to take this episode here. Great smoked ribs, pork, chicken, beans, pork and beans they got. They got biscuits. There's a ridiculous pecan pie, which I think we're going to have to try that in a minute. So look it up on the web and come down here. It's near Azaba Juban Station. You go out exit 4, and it's a straight shot, and it'll be on your left side. And you can even walk here from Roppongi Hills. It's probably about a 10-minute walk from there.
Right.
Tell them you heard about it on the podcast, and thanks for listening.
Okay, and see you next week, I reckon.
See you next time, buddy.
Okay, cheers.
All right.